Being single keeps you looking young, feeling young, or something. I think. I've never been married, so that's been my life. And I was thinking I should have got one of those T-shirts that were popular a few years ago on the internet. You have this sort of old-fashioned cartoon woman going, "My goodness, I forgot to get married," you know. But it's sort of been a bit like that. It's like, oh, where did those years go? But I'll just tell you what I'd like us to do. What I'd like to do this afternoon is we've got about an hour. I'm happy to hang around afterwards and chat, though, if anyone would like to chat. But in that hour, I'd like to talk to you for a while. Unfortunately, I can talk underwater. I've got one of my staff from Somerville here. She'll vouch for that. So I do need to stop myself and keep looking at my watch. I'd like to talk to you for a while and then give the opportunity for questions, because I always find the Q&A is really useful in sessions like this as well too. So thank you. This mountain brings back lots of great memories for me. I actually became a Christian when I was a student at school through my Scripture Union group at Kelvin Grove State High School, and it happened just up here at the one near the convention centre up there. So just always lovely to come back. Okay, so in talking about flying solo, the ups and downs of being single, well, the thing is, most people do marry, okay? It is the norm in life. We're made that way by God. You know, when God created Adam, he saw that it wasn't good and that it would be best for Adam to have a helper, a helpmate. An interesting thing about that, I discovered the other day listening to a theologian on a podcast, I can't remember who it was now, that word for helper or helping occurs about, I think it's 18 times in the Old Testament, and it's referred to in terms of Eve. The other times, the other 16 times, twice I think to do with Eve, and the other 16 times it's God as the helper. So that's quite a status that Eve had. However, even though most people do marry and it is the norm and it's the way God's designed us to be, Jesus was single, and as are many great Christian leaders who've been wonderful role models over the year, people like John Stott, John Chapman, if you remember those gentlemen from the past. Singleness is not a deficit as such. It would be one of the things I'd say right at the start. The other thing to acknowledge too, and I know people come to sessions like this for all sorts of reasons. Some of you are married. Some of you have come to find out how the church can perhaps look after single people better. Some of you may have never married, like myself. Some of you are quite young, and some of you are not quite so young, like myself. Some of you may have been married but are no longer married for a variety of reasons. So, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios in which we find ourselves single, and there's a great diversity in terms of how people feel about being single. Some people feel quite content. Some people feel particularly happy that they're single. Some people are quite angry about being single, angry with God, angry with the world, and they can become cranky. I've worked in body corporates with some of those people. Some people are very sad about being single. Some people are very happy. Some people are ever hopeful, you know, that this is not a permanent state for them. So all of those things, there's a great diversity with how we might feel at the moment about being single, and that might change over time as well too. There are also, I think, quite a diverse number of reasons why we end up being single. There's a number of things. Maybe it is a gift from God, and celibacy is referred to as a gift from God in the Bible. Some people I know sort of it's a gift they want to keep giving back, and they really don't want that gift. Some people see it much more as a cross to bear rather than a gift from God. Sometimes being single is your choice. Sometimes it's someone else's choice. You didn't really have a choice about being single. And then for some people, it just means you haven't found the right person yet. Some people feel incredibly single at the age of 20, you know. Other people, you know, at the age of 40 don't particularly feel single. They just haven't got married yet. Statistics tell us that there are more single households than previously. And so in one sense, it's a bit easier to fit in these days than when I was a young person growing up, where being single was perhaps a lot more unusual. These days, in the world in general, and in the church, of course, too, there are a lot more single people. And part of that reason, too, is that the average age for people getting married for the first time has risen quite significantly as well, too. As I was introduced, at the moment I'm the chaplain at Somerville House Girls' School. You can tell from the way I'm dressed that I work at a la-di-da sort of a girls' school. One of the things I have the privilege of doing is conducting weddings. And most of the girls that I marry are old girls from the school, and they are mostly getting married in their late 20s or even early 30s, usually having lived together for several years with someone, and then in their 30s deciding they want to have a child, so they get married and within a year they produce a baby, which they come and show me. So that's always fun. There are, I think, some, and have been, perhaps less so these days, some very distorted views about what it means to be a single person. Here are some of the distortions that I've come across at different times over the years. One is that single people are somehow failures in relationships. They can't conduct a relationship with the opposite gender very well. That's definitely a distortion of the truth. I know lots of wonderful people who are single or single again. Another one is that a single person is not complete. I didn't see this myself, but a friend of mine was at a church service once where the speaker held up a half a zipper and said, "This is what a single person is like, just useless, incomplete without the other half." It's ridiculous, isn't it? I know, very harsh. Hopefully you don't hear too much of that anymore. And then other people have a bit of a distorted view too, that being single is somehow a more spiritual state than being married as well. So there's a number of different what I would call distortions about what it means to be single. I would suggest to you today, and what I want to talk about, is that there are various benefits and various challenges about being single. And I think it is always easier to concentrate on the benefits. The other thing I want to say too, before I start talking about benefits and challenges, is that we are all broken human beings. You know, we're all made in God's image to reflect who God is. We're all broken. So whether we're single or whether we're married, we're not doing it the perfect way. This is not heaven. We're never going to experience that complete satisfaction and contentment this side of heaven. And I know for some people who are single, they feel perhaps if they were married, that would be the answer to a lot of their problems. But that's not always necessarily the case, having talked to many married friends over the years as well. So a few of the benefits, the things that I think are good about being single. I wonder when you start being single. You know, did I start being single when I was 18 or when I was born or what? You know, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? I didn't ever felt single as such. I mean, when I was in my 20s and I was getting involved in leading Christian things, there were definitely, and perhaps the members present here today reflect that, there were certainly a lot more single women than men, you know, in the church. That was definitely the case. We seem to be better at evangelising girls and boys for some reason. But being involved in Christian leadership, I was just busy doing other things and didn't think too much about it. So I'm not too sure at what point you start to say to yourself, "Oh, I'm single, look at that." Here are some of the benefits that I find about being single. I have the freedoms to make decisions about what I'm going to do on a daily basis without having to check with anyone else. So when someone rang me up to ask me if I'd like to come and speak here this weekend, I pray about that, obviously. But I didn't have to check with anyone else or, you know, I mean, I do have obligations. I have a family. I have sisters and nieces and so on. But I didn't have to check with anyone else to sort of find out whether I could or couldn't do that. I see someone hurrahing. It's a good part about being single. I'm also free to establish my own identity. You know, I am who I am. There's nobody else that I'm, you know, sort of that's tied up with. Sometimes one can become a bit of a shadow of the person that you're with, your partner. But I can establish my own identity. Can I just say too, I'm 61 now. You also have the freedom to become a bit quirky. I was having a rather unusual mixture of things for lunch the other day, just finishing off what was in the fridge before I went away. And I thought, isn't it just as well nobody else is here to see this strange mixture of things I'm having for lunch? Now, I sort of just got the freedom to do what I like. Nobody's going to tell me otherwise. I have the freedom to withdraw from difficult relationships. And that's an interesting aspect of being single. I have commitments, obviously, to my church and to my friends and to my family, but there is a sense in which I can withdraw or temporarily withdraw a lot more easily than if you're a married person. And I have the potential to change direction in my life very easily. If God calls me in a particular direction, I feel called to do something, it's a lot easier for me to do that. If I suddenly decided that God was calling me to serve him overseas, to be a teacher in Africa or something, it's a lot easier for me to do that rather than to see whether my partner feels the same calling and whether, you know, that's going to work for other people in my life. Another benefit, and I hope this take this in the right way, but there's a sense of accomplishment. and independence that I what I have achieved in my life and who I am is God's work and my work. I'm not in anyone else's shadow. And there is a kind of a nice sense of achievement about that, if it doesn't sound too arrogant. It's just like, well, you know, God and I have worked on this together. I've certainly had my failures and my ups and downs lots of times, but there is a sense of accomplishment that way. And there's a sort of a simplicity, in a sense, about my life. My decisions can be made without affecting another person as much. Also, as a single person, I enjoy privacy. And this is especially good if you are an introvert. I'm not an introvert, but I still do quite like my privacy, and I think I've grown to enjoy my own company even more in recent years. I remember a number of years ago when I had three godchildren whose mother passed away when she was only 40, and so they were left as, you know, teenagers. One of them wasn't even a teenager. At different times, two of them came to live with me. And I remember one of them, when she came, I remember coming home from work one day and the cups were in the wrong cupboard. I remember thinking, somebody's moved my cups, you know. And then I suddenly thought, this is silly. But you do become very sort of set in your own ways, and you kind of, your privacy is something that you crave. But it was like, no, it's a privilege to have her here. What a great opportunity to get to know her and to influence her a bit at that young age. But so privacy can be a nice thing. And I have opportunities to devote myself to Christian service in a more flexible way. So I can, as I said, I don't have to. If you've got a family, even more. You know, if you've got a husband, but certainly if you've got a spouse, certainly if you've got a family, there are certain types of Christian service that are quite difficult. Certain places where it's difficult to go with a whole family. There's an expense aspect of it. There's just a, you know, there is a lot more flexibility in terms of Christian service. And the other good thing, and I'll say this as something that I think is a real benefit of being single, is that I am forced to find my security in my relationship with God. I only arrived about halfway through Gary's session. I was sitting outside listening this morning, but he talked about the different things that we come to rely on superficially instead of finding our contentment in the Lord himself. And for me, or as a single person, you know, in terms of a sense of security, I have to find security in my relationship with God, not in another person. One of my favourite verses has always been, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And having you, I desire nothing else, nothing on earth. My flesh and my heartbeat might fail, but you are the strength of my life and my portion forever." And that's a verse that I aspire to. I must say, as I sat there listening to Gary, I fall into the trap like everybody else does of things that distract me from what I need to be seeking my contentment in. But as a single person, I have a few less distractions and temptations. I have to find my security in my relationship with God. And I have more time, more love, more energy, I suppose, to devote to a wider range of people as a single person as well too. If you're married and you have children, that is your focus, rightfully so. That's your main focus. It shouldn't be your exclusive focus, but it certainly is a main focus. I have the flexibility to devote my life to a very wide range of people in the ways that I choose. So I think when the Apostle Paul talks about being single, and I'll refer to that passage a bit later on, that's part of what he's talking about. You know, you've got that freedom and that flexibility to serve God in a different kind of a way. Now, of course, there's always a downside to things. So what are the challenges of being single? One challenge that's an obvious one that sort of comes at different ways at different points in life is loneliness. No one to come home to. No one to be the most important person in the world to. No one to help you make the big decisions in life. You know, my dad passed away, just to add to it, when I was only about 30. So, you know, I didn't even have someone when I was buying my first property and doing things like that. You know, there's no one else to kind of see whether you're making a big mistake or check your decisions with. That's definitely a downside. And some people I know feel very lonely as a single person. I must admit, this time last year, when we were going into lockdown, I was quite terrified as an extrovert as to what this was going to mean. And, you know, it's like, whoa, what am I going to do? And I, you know, was actually contemplating, if it was complete lockdown, going to live with my sister, who's one of my sisters, also not married. She has a flatmate, but they were happy for me to come and live there for as long as the lockdown went on. So it can be, you know, it strikes you in different ways at different times, particularly when something like COVID happens to disrupt your normal securities and routines. Sometimes it's good to be shaken up a bit. The other thing is, there's no one to keep an eye out for you, you know. And I remember a friend of mine a few weeks ago, she's an older lady again, she's in her early 70s, she's not a Christian, and she doesn't enjoy good health. She's got some heart issues and so on. And she was fortunately visiting somebody when she had an episode. She became violently ill. Now, she said if she'd have been at home, she would have just taken herself off to bed probably. But fortunately, the couple that she was with called an ambulance, and off she went to hospital with what turned out to be a twisted stomach. You know, a stomach sort of moves its way up into the esophagus, a very nasty business. And if she hadn't gone when she had, she would have been in real trouble, life-threatening trouble. So if she'd been on her own, making decisions the way she normally does, she probably wouldn't have gone. It's the same, you know, for someone like me, no one to keep an eye out for you in that kind of sense. So sometimes for someone like me, I tend to try to fit a lot into my days. Someone to tell you when to slow down, someone to tell you when you're being too busy, you know, someone to look out for you a little bit that way. And I remember when I first started this job, and I was getting accreditation through my denomination to become a pastor, and I went to the regional interviewing panel, and one woman there very wisely said to me, "So who tells you when to stop when you've done enough?" And I thought, that's a really good question. Because if you are a single person, you're less likely to have someone tell you that perhaps it's time to slow down a little bit, or perhaps it's time to stop beating on that particular door or whatever. It can be a challenge for some people, find it a real challenge to their self-esteem, because I think this particularly applies if you've come through a broken relationship, because it can cause you to wonder if you're not worthy of love. You know, am I not worthy? Am I not lovable? Is there something wrong with me? And as I said at the start, we're all broken people. I've had a few married friends who tell me it's a miracle any marriage survives, given that how human we are and sort of being together and having to put up with each other. But, you know, it can be a self-esteem issue. And I suppose, too, in the past and probably even now, there are probably fewer examples of really good role models for single people. And that's sort of been a hard thing. I've been very fortunate, particularly through Script Union, having some incredible single women who have been role models to me. If any of you know people like Glenn Palmer and Lynn Gallagher and Ruth Armstrong and Joan Dumpsing, all these amazing women who are single and older than I am, and I'm very grateful for them as role models in my life. For some people, the issue of not being able to have children is a really big thing. That wasn't particularly an issue for me, but for some people, I've got one friend who married in her late 30s, went on to have four boys, but I think it was part of the thing for her was that she really, really, really wanted to have a family, and that was very important for her. And particularly at certain ages and stages of your life, sexual frustration is a real issue. I mean, that was meant to be a way that we express our love for each other within a committed relationship of marriage. And for a lot of single people, sexual purity is a real challenge, particularly in this day and age. But then it is for married people as well too, but certainly for single people. And that frustration at certain stages of your life is a big issue for many. One of the other challenges, and I don't know, this is probably more of a woman's thing than a man's thing, but I could be wrong, is the boundaries that are needed in same-sex friendships. And over the years, having observed and having experienced various friendships that come and go, I have seen that sometimes you have to be a little bit careful about those boundaries, because no matter how close a friend you have as a girlfriend, as a female friend, no matter how close a friend, you don't have a committed relationship with them. You know, you're a friend, I suppose that's a level of commitment, but it's not like being married, and it's not an exclusive relationship in any sense at all. And you do need to set boundaries. I've seen a lot, you know, quite a few single women come unstuck a bit in that area when it comes to be that friendships come to mean a bit too much, I suppose. The other thing that's an interesting challenge that I've observed, having gone through several phases of it now, are changing relationships with married friends. So when you first, you're all single together, and then people start to pair off and get married. And generally speaking, that doesn't sort of interfere with things too much, except that you're relating to them a bit more as a couple. When your married friends start having children, though, that's when things really change, because their interests and their focus naturally has to be quite different from yours. And you do start to experience that usually in your late 20s, early 30s. And you've got to go with that. That's just the way it is. And yes, your friends won't have as much time or energy for you. One of the ways I compensated for that was to try to become friends with my friend's husband, or in one case, my friend's wife, you know, when he got married. And also to become friends with their children. And you get the fun thing about being an honorary godmother to them. And the one who passed away, that woman who passed away, that was very much the case with my relationship with that family. It's a lovely relationship. So you have to work with that. And your married friends with family do have different priorities. But then they come back to you later on when their children are off their hands, or their children are frustrating teenagers and they want someone to talk to about it. So, you know, you tend to be a listening ear during that phase. And then later on, as their lives become a bit more, their children become more independent, they do come back to you. So there's that kind of nice things. But there, it is a changing relationship with your married friends. One thing that I always say at this stage is that you have to be very careful, and I've experienced this a couple of times, that sometimes, you know, for me, in my situation, some married women can be threatened by you in their relationship with their husband. You have to be careful about that, and you have to really respect that. And if, particularly if you've got friends who are going through a rocky patch in their marriage, and I've certainly had a few of those, you have to be very, very careful. You don't, in that sort of a situation, I would never allow myself to become a confidant for the man in the relationship. I don't think that would be appropriate. And you just have to be very careful when you are catching up with married friends that you don't become a threat. And I've had various friends who've gone through that. I've got one friend too who's just, she's a lovely woman, and she's married herself, but her husband is away a lot with his work. And she's recently become friends with a couple, but she actually became a threat to the husband because his wife was really enjoying this new friendship. And there was nothing inappropriate or anything about it. It was just that she was finding, you know, a lot of connection both spiritually and emotionally with this woman. And even married people, they need single friends. They need other friends. One partner can't supply all your emotional needs. I don't think marriage was ever meant to be that. That puts too much pressure on a relationship. But you do have to be careful about people being threatened. And I have had that same friend whose wife passed away remarried a number of years later, and I'd been friends with him. We worked out at one stage that he and I were each other's longest standing friends. We'd met when we were about 7 and 6, and he was just like a brother, really. But of course, when he met a new woman, I had to be very, very careful about that relationship, because she would very easily be very threatened by me. And he introduced me as, oh, you know, this is Chriso. She knows everything about me. If you need to know anything, just ask her. And I'm thinking, I think that was the wrong thing to say. Anyway, it was. But so you just have to be very careful. But you've got to give priority to your friends' marriages and guard that too, because that's a precious thing. Marriage is under attack from all different directions these days, isn't it? And as a single person too, you have reduced financial power. If you were following my bio there, I've worked for 3 years in the state system as a teacher, you know, doing all the things that teachers do in their first 3 years, buying a car, paying off my debts and getting my wisdom teeth out. That's what all teachers do in their first 3 years. And then I went to work for Scripture Union, where my salary was effectively cut in half. And I finished up with Scripture Union in my mid-30s and found myself the proud owner of a car, $10,000 in the bank, a very good Phantom comic collection, and a beanbag. And that was about it. And my friends by then, you know, had property. It was back in the 80s and 90s when, you know, it was a good time to be getting into real estate. So they were all doing very well. And I realised without a partner, it was up to me. I had to save up and buy a property. And, you know, fortunately, God blessed me with a great job at BBC, where I was able to do that, and a great job at Somerville, where preparing for the next stage of life was also possible financially. So, you know, that's been a lot of hard work, but financially you have fewer options if you are a single. As time goes by and you get, because I'm an older single person now, loneliness doesn't necessarily lessen, but one becomes more used to being alone, I think, would be the way to say that. And you do become more set in your ways as a single person. And as I said before, I have to be careful about that. I'm sure, quite quirky. But fortunately, one of my very good single friends is about to move to Toowoomba. But, you know, she's also very quirky. So we have a great time catching up and being quirky together. We have different sorts of quirks. And as I said before too, friends do become available again as their families grow up. And unfortunately, you know, as their partners pass away for different reasons too. So, and then you can be a support to that person who finds themselves suddenly single, or their marriage relationship breaks down, and you can be a support to them. I've you know, as someone who has been used to being on their own. And then I think when you're a single person, you need to think very carefully about retirement and how you're going to manage that. Some single people kind of get together in retirement, retire together, but you just have to make sure, I think, that you're well connected into different communities. So some of you might be approaching that age, or at least seeing it on the horizon like I am, and I watch very closely all those wonderful Christian role models that I've had through my life, they're all now retired. And so I watch very carefully how they do that as Christian women. And it's just wonderful to see the different, and Christian men, some of them too. It's just wonderful to see the different ways they manage themselves through retirement. I might just stop there for a minute. I've got a bit more that I want to say, but are there any sort of questions or comments that you want to make at this point?
I don't think that in the accident, but why there's more single people, not just in the church, but anywhere there's more single people than ever in any other time in the age. And I think if we have revival, are there less single people available to be involved in that?
Yeah, that's right. You're right. There are more single people than at any other time through history. What was the last bit? We can be more involved. I might get you to take your mask off when you ask your question. I'm a little bit deaf too.
That's like if we have revival, then we can be there. Like,
yeah, that's right. That's true. The good thing is that, you know, because there are a lot more single people around, I suppose we as Christians, it's a community that we can reach out into, isn't it? You know, and for me, the sort of properties I've lived in a unit, then a townhouse. There's usually a number of other single people in that complex, so of different ages. So you've got the opportunity to reach out to people like that, and that's true. Any other comments or questions at this point?
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's sometimes I think it's a bit of a personality thing. I just know some of my friends, and as I say, this particular one is married, and we've had a very strong friendship for a very long time now too. Some people are just a bit more intense in relationships than others, I think, and you just have to be very careful setting boundaries there, I think. And it's keeping in mind that whenever you've got a friend, if you're a single person, it's never an exclusive relationship. They have other friends, you have other friends. I mean, I've got a number of people I consider my besties. I remember reading once that it's always good to have, you know, five people that you know who are good friends that you could go to, or family members, sometimes your best friend's your sister, you know, five people that you could go to and you could pretty much tell anything to. And I've always sort of kept that number in mind, because with the work I've been involved in, I do know a lot of people, but I've always had those five besties. But I'm always very careful, and like this friend who's moving to Toowoomba, you know, in a couple of weeks, it's like, wow, you know, our relationship's been through, she's lived geographically differently for different times as well, but it's like I always have to be ready for the fact that that's the way it is, you know. She might choose to retire there, I might choose to retire at the Sunshine Coast, and, you know, that's just the way that has to be. So you have to, if you're the sort of person that does develop those kind of relationships, that's when I think you have to be aware. I think some people are and some people aren't. Some people just aren't very good at building deep relationships, and it's a lovely thing to have a deep relationship, but there's just a boundary of exclusiveness that you've got to be very careful about, I find, as a single person. There's a lovely verse in Psalms, isn't there, that says God has placed the lonely in families. And I think that's a really good verse, and quite a number of friends of mine are very much a part of other people's families, and you know, godmothers to the children's children and all sorts of things over a very long period of time. So yes, you're right though, Monica, you have to handle it very carefully, and you have to get it out on the table. That same friend whose wife passed away, when he met her when they were very young at university, he went to university up in North Queensland, and I knew as soon as he brought her back, even though we were only young and hadn't thought these kind of serious issues through too much, I knew straight away that if I was going to stay his friend, I had to become her friend too. And it was a bit easier, I suppose, when you're 20, 21, you know, you're a bit more open. But I was more aware of what was going on when she passed away and he met this second woman. And I have remained very close to the children in that relationship as well too. But the children, you know, now are adults with their own children. So, yeah, that's right. So it is lovely. So a few things to bear in mind, and this is, I don't know, some of you may well be married here, and you're interested in just knowing how to support single people and how single people think, but a few things to bear in mind. Single people don't have endless time, even though we do have flexibility. That's a mistake people can make. I think, well, I've got to do everything at my place, you know, the thing the man does and the thing that the woman does, you know. I have to do the washing up and iron the clothes, and I have to make sure the car's okay and the garden and the rubbish is taken out and everything. So it's not actually that you have more time. You do have flexibility, though. Single people do understand love and emotions at a deep level. Some people kind of think single people are sort of emotional dwarfs somehow, but that's not true either. And if you are single and you would rather not be, live your life still, live your life now as a single person, not forever waiting or delaying decisions in the hope of being married. I've had friends at different times when we're in our 30s who delayed decisions like buying their first home or whatever because they were hopeful they were going to get married, and what if he doesn't want to live in this home? And that can be a trick. You know, you've got to get on with your life and don't just delay everything in the hope that you might get married. If you get married, it'll work out. You know, you can do something, you can sell a property. There's no problem with that. The other thing to bear in mind for both single people and married people, sometimes married people are quite jealous of us. They quite like our independence and our flexibility. But the grass always looks greener on the other side of the fence, except at the moment it looks green everywhere. But it's married life can often be very, very difficult. We might think, oh, if only I was married, half of my problems would go away. Married life can be very, very difficult. And I remember someone saying to me, and I must say I do probably agree, in some ways it's probably better to be unhappily single than unhappily married. Because if you're unhappily married, you're influencing a lot of other people, probably children, a spouse and so on. Single people can become more self-focused. Generally, having observed my friends, having children is the greatest cure for selfishness. I can be quite selfish unless I put my mind to it. But if you have children, I think you sort of learn very quickly that the food on the plate is not necessarily all yours, and all sorts of other important lessons there, particularly if they're boys. Another thing to bear in mind is it's easy to live an unaccountable life as a single person, and that can be very dangerous for us. It is important to be accountable, whether you're single or married. If you're married, you're at least accountable to each other. We're all accountable to the Lord, of course. But you need to be accountable to other people too. And it's good to have friends, you know, who keep you accountable. I've got a friend who's a bit like that smart woman at your church, who she's my truth-telling friend. I tell the girls at school, you know, she gets herself into trouble and she offends people from time to time. But I'm so glad she's in my life, because if I ask her a question, she'll give me a straight answer. And she's one of my five besties. You know, she'll give me a straight answer. She's a truth teller. And that verse, speaking the truth in love, is so important. And if I'm at the moment sort of working through, I sort of say it with a slight tongue-in-cheek, a slight addiction to my phone, playing words with friends and doing other silly things in the evening when I should be either praying, reading a book or going to bed. And so she and I have a deal at the moment. She's got a similar sort of a struggle that we're not to touch our phones after 9 o'clock at the absolute latest. And we keep each other honest about that. We talk to each other about that. She's not afraid to ask me, how's it going with the phone? That sort of thing. So it's all good. So being, you know, it is easy to live an unaccountable life, and that's dangerous for any of us. And I said before, that lovely verse in Psalm 68, God places the lonely in families. And as Monica has shared as well too, there are limits there, and you need to think very carefully about how to relate to families as a family. Some biblical perspectives. God made us for companionship, as I said at the beginning in Genesis 2. As I said right at the beginning, you know, it was not, God saw that it was not good for the man to be alone. I'll make a suitable companion for him. And the fall, part of the fall, the consequences are broken relationships as well as our relationship with God. Some causes of singleness are a result of brokenness, but if you are single, it doesn't mean that you have sinned in any particular way. I remember I was of that age where people a bit older than my mother, sort of between my mother and my grandmother, that generation, there are a lot of single women because of the wars and because of men going off to war. And there was just, it was a very common thing. We all had these sort of aunties, honorary aunties, who just hadn't been able to get married because there just weren't enough men around. So sometimes you have that kind of situation. Sometimes, I remember talking to a girl at school in a Christian education class once when we were doing a unit on marriage and relationships. And she said, you know, Miss O'Gorman, I can't think of one happy marriage in my whole family. She said, my grandparents are both divorced, my parents are divorced, my aunts and uncles aren't married. And I just thought, that's tragic. She couldn't think of one good role model. I thought, what's her chances of having a happy marriage? She doesn't know what one looks like. And so there's a lot of brokenness there. And I think too, unrealistic expectations. As I said before, some people think marriage is the be-all and do-all, and it'll solve all their problems. But you can't ever put that sort of pressure on one person. The sort of societies we have now kind of force us into these little nuclear families, but the intensity of the relationships puts a lot of pressure on relationships. Paul's advice in 1 Corinthians 7, if I can just read it to you, 1 Corinthians 7, 25 to 40 is one of the classic passages about singleness. And they think that Paul might have been married but became single, not too sure of the circumstances. I'm not a theologian. But he says, now concerning what you wrote about unmarried people, I do not have a command from the Lord, but I give my opinion as one who by the Lord's mercy is worthy of trust. That's interesting, isn't it? This is his opinion. Considering the present distress, I think it's better for a man to stay as he is. Do you have a wife? Then don't try to get rid of her. It's nice. Are you unmarried? Then don't look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have committed no. If you do marry, you haven't committed a sin. And if an unmarried woman marries, she hasn't committed a sin. But I'd rather spare you the everyday troubles that married people will have. What I mean, my friends, is this. There's not much time left, and from now on, a married people should live as though they were not married. Those who weep as though they were not sad. Those who laugh as though they were not happy. Those who buy as though they did not own what they bought. Those who deal in material goods as though they were not fully occupied with them. For this world, as it is now, will not last much longer. I would like you to be free from worry. An unmarried man concerns himself with the Lord's work because he's trying to please the Lord. But a married man concerns himself with worldly matters because he wants to please his wife. And so he is pulled in two directions. An unmarried woman or a virgin concerns herself with the Lord's work because she wants to be dedicated both in body and spirit. But a married woman concerns herself with worldly matters because she wants to please her husband. I'm saying this because I want to help you. I'm not trying to put restrictions on you. Instead, I want you to do what is right and proper and to give yourselves completely to the Lord's service without any reservation. So what I take from that is that Paul is not condemning marriage as such, but he is saying if you can be single, be single for the sake of God's kingdom, if that is a gift that God has given you. But he's not making any sort of hard and fast rules about that. And it is just true out of practicality that if you're married, there is a lot more time taken up with the everyday survival things, providing for a family. It was hilarious. My friend who's married late and sort of had these four boys, we went shopping one day and we were out having lunch and she said, "Do you mind if I just do a bit of grocery shopping?" And I said, "No, sure, I need to do some too." So we went to the supermarket at Coolangatta and I sort of got all my stuff in a little bag and I said, "This is my groceries for the week." And she had this massive big trolley. She said, "This is mine for 2 days. It'll get me through to Wednesday." So it's a lot more expensive, I think, to be married. So just a last couple of comments perhaps for Christian groups and churches, to be sensitive to the needs of those who are single as well as those who are partnered, to also remember that not all single people are the same. Some are really upset about being single, others are quite content about being single, and you've got to discern that. Get to know people, you'll find out. Be careful with series in the church designed for married people, parents, mothers, Father's Day. Not saying don't have them, I don't agree with that either. But I do think we just have to be a little bit careful. And even at my school, you know, we have kids who have lost a parent for whatever reason. So now if we have a Mother's Day thing, we have to call it Mothers and Significant Women Day. Or, you know, there's all these little things that you just try to be sensitive so that you're including people. I mean, sometimes if it's not wrong to have teaching on marriage at church, it's terribly important, but I might choose not to go to church that day or whatever. But, you know, it's just, you know, you just got to be sensitive in the way that you go about it. Do try to integrate single people into home groups and church activities, particularly older single people, the people who are of that age where most others will be married. And families can include single people and extend hospitality to them. Because sometimes, as was said before, someone gets married and suddenly you drop out of that friendship group, or they think of inviting people around for a dinner party and they sort of think in pairs. It's okay to have seven, not six or eight. Who ever said that? Yeah, seven's God's number anyway, isn't it? You know, so don't include single people in what's going on in families and so on. So just to conclude, one final passage comes from Philippians 4, verse 11 to 13. This passage was written actually with respect to financial circumstances, not whether you're married or not, but I think it can be applied fairly broadly too. But in Philippians 4, 11 to 13, Paul says, I'm not saying this because I feel neglected, for I've learnt to be satisfied, or content, another version says, with what I have. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have more than enough. I've learnt this secret so that anywhere at any time I am content, whether I'm full or hungry, whether I have too much or too little. I have the strength to face all conditions by the power that Christ gives me. So the clue is, whether you're married or whether you're single, to be content in that state, even if you are hopeful that state will change or is temporary or whatever. Not the marriage one, don't wish that's temporary. But, you know, if you're single and you're hoping to change that, that's fine. But be content where you are. Because people's radars are up, you know, if you're desperate, people can see that coming a mile away anyway, as I tell you. So it's important to sort of look after yourself that way.